Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
To the Thinker Girls pod channel. I'm Stacey June.
And I'm Christy Mercer. Are you talking slower than normal?
Yeah, because I was opening up a guest sheet. Oh. So I was doing two things at once.
I was like, the speed of the vocal is different to what I usually hear on my ear holes.
I'll speed it up to the Speedy Gonzales that I usually am.
Yeah, come on.
Today is an interview podcast. We drop all different shows on this pod channel, and today's interview is with Bronte Campbell, the Olympic and Commonwealth swimmer. You may have realised who Bronte was. I'm not saying that you wouldn't have from her athletic success, but there was a real big kind of press, I suppose, focus on her when her and her sister raced against each other. Mm. Was it in the more recent Olympics or Commonwealth Games?
Well, both. They've been racing against each other their whole lives.
But there was like one particular time where I feel like, I think it was the Commonwealth Games, where it was, I felt like the media was really on top of it.
Maybe it was. It would have been a couple of years ago, the Olympics, I think 2016. Mm. Rio?
No, I reckon it was the Com Games because they were on Denton together.
Oh, yeah.
On Denton's
and
new
there was
show.
There was the big story of them, and they did the big, you know, family piece, and she was talking about, you know, their younger brother that was disabled, and I think that was on 60 Minutes, a big piece that you got a real sense of watching and going, they're just decent humans, those girls. They're just good people.
Their parents shipped them over from South Africa to Australia to hope that they were going to get the life that they dreamt for their family. And her story is really remarkable at how grassroots it begin. You know, it starts, that she lived up around the corner from a pool and was so, so, so ambitious and determined as a young little girl. And I don't know if many of you have kids or many of you have little girls or, you know, or it takes you back to having that determination as a young girl. But there was this real effervescent energy that came out from her that you could tell would have been in her at a very, very young age.
It was a really fascinating chat, I think. And you mentioned this in the record that we did with Bronte when we did this a little bit ago. And that was, you're a very emotionally intelligent person, just very switched on, kind of knows who she is and knows the way that people work and picks up on different bits and pieces that aren't necessarily obviously said, which I found, I absolutely got that impression from her too.
She's won 10 gold, 9 silver, 3 bronze medals, as well as setting the world record for the 100-meter freestyle relay at the Rio Olympics. She's an incredible, incredible girl, and we were so happy that she joined us in the studio. So we hope you enjoyed this chat. Bronte Campbell, welcome to the Thinker Girls Pod Channel.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, I was at an awkward time. Bronte's just had a sip of water because you've come straight from the gym, Dale, with your hair's wet.
Chrissy, it's just not about her time. Like, we've just got to just jump in when we can.
Well, it is exactly. With a special guest. It's all about you, actually.
Well, I did kind of invade your home, so I feel like it could be on your terms a little bit.
You're looking at me as you say your home. It's not. It's with Stacey's.
Yeah, I'm sitting here going, exactly. No,
it's my home.
I'm not. But I am saying that I find it interesting with podcasts. A lot of talk shows and radio shows and all that traditional media are definitely very guest-focused, where this show seems to be a conversation, I think. Mm. So we're all jumping in when we want, just giving you a pre-warning too. Don't wait your turn. Because if you wait your turn...
My turn's not coming.
Oh, it's tough.
You strike me as somebody that would know how to elbow their way into a conversation, though.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, like in a lovely way. I don't feel like you're waiting for somebody to tap you on the shoulder to be like, now's your time for your opinion.
Well, I'm one of 5 kids, so if you didn't speak up, you didn't get heard, so...
Where are you in the 5? Because interesting, is it, with famous families, because everybody just associates you as having you and your sister Kate... being like, oh, the swimming girls. It's kind of like how there's another child that Will Smith has that everyone's like, oh, this poor other kid.
Wait, there's another one?
Yeah.
He's got 3 kids.
Yeah, no shit. That's not Willow, and that's also not Jaden. And not Jaden.
There's another one.
So, like, who are the other poor, like, your three other siblings are the unknown Will Smith child.
I know, and aren't they bloody lucky? No, I'm second eldest, so all the other ones are younger.
How old, and where's Kate in the situation?
She's the eldest. Yeah. Oh, so me and Kate, we're the eldest two, and then the rest of them.
Right. And you guys were not born in Australia?
No, we were all, except for the last one, we were all born in Malawi, which is in Africa.
So tell us about that. What took you there? Well, what were your parents doing there?
Yeah, my parents took me there. I didn't have a bloody choice. My parents are both South African, and then they moved to Malawi and just got a job there, and they loved it, so they just settled down there. And they were there for 10 years and had four kids there, and then moved out to Australia. My younger brother is pretty severely disabled. He had some major complications at birth, which a Malawian hospital can't even begin to deal with. So,
yeah, right.
When they fell pregnant again with the youngest one, decided we had to, well, we'd always been, you have to get out of Africa at some point because there's no opportunity there. And so that's when we all moved to Australia. So they, crazy people that they are, packed up their lives, and with four kids under nine and 7 months pregnant with another one, landed in Australia. They had the phone number of one person who was a friend of a friend, and that was it. So they're completely nuts, but I'm really glad that they are.
What legends. Are they still together now, your parents?
Yeah, they are. Right. Yeah, they're still going strong.
So how old were you when you moved to Australia?
I was seven, which seems pretty young, but I can remember a lot from Africa. You remember a lot from when you're young.
Well, so. I was going to say, what do you remember of that time and the transition going from Malawi to Australia? I remember when Dad told us we were moving, you know, like, not even states, moving suburbs at 10. And we thought he was the worst person in the world because you've got all your friends, you know, you're set up. Were you happy to be moving at that time? What do you remember?
I remember crying when we left because, like, you're leaving all your friends behind. Mm. There was, like, a close expat community there. But also really excited to come to Australia. Everyone had sort of... Australia's got a good rep overseas. We've got really good PR. Everyone wants to be here. But when we got here, like, just couldn't believe it. I mean, I come from Malawi, where there's rolling blackouts every few hours. There's one traffic light which doesn't work, and if you left, like, your doors open, you got burgled. We had, like, guardsmen outside our house, like, keeping guard all night. We had, like, a little guard dog ready to go, and then we came here, and no houses or fences.
Did you have an idea that there was a whole other world going out there, or did you just kind of take it on the chin because you were a kid and that was what you grew up around?
Yeah, you're a kid, so you don't notice it, but you do. You obviously know that it's there. I mean, you go outside and all the street kids come and they all want to kind of have a play with you, which is fine. We used to play with them a lot, but you go outside and outside your door, there's beggars on the street. It's not like you don't notice it when you're a kid, but it sort of just seems like that's the way things are. And we'd always bring food and give people food rather than give people money, because that doesn't really do very much. But yeah, you just take it in your stride when you're a kid. You don't realize, like, that's not how the world should be. And then once you move, you're like, oh my God, this is so much better.
So when you get here, how does swimming start to kind of get into your mind and your heart, I suppose? Because if you have such a success with something, I suppose you must love it.
Yeah, well, actually, it was a bit more like a sickness. I was obsessed. I moved here, it was the year after the Olympics. I just watched all the swimmers dominate from Australia, and I knew I was going to become and be part of this new country, and we moved just down.
So you were watching it from Africa?
From Africa, yeah. Right. So that was the 2000 Olympics.
So what you're saying is Nikki Webster did inspire your entire swimming career.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, there you go, Nikki Webster.
You heard it here first, babe.
You're watching it and you're already knowing you're moving.
Yeah, already knowing that we were moving at that point. So knowing I was going to be Australian, and we moved in and didn't know anybody, moved halfway through the school term. So wasn't going to school until the end of that term. And we moved within walking distance of the swimming pool. So I used to get up and walk myself to the pool. I was such a freak. I used to get up and walk and go there like an hour and a half early so I could watch everyone else, because I thought that would make me a better swimmer.
But hang on, talk to me. You're 7 years old. So how are you having that kind of...
You were seven.
Like, disciplined or like knowing.
You know how I said it was like a sickness? It was like a proper obsession.
But
like,
your parents are like, no worries, Bronte, you can go down an hour and a half before you need to actually be there. You just scroll down.
I could walk. So, and I mean, that's the other thing within Africa. Like, we used to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the other big thing. I never wore shoes. I didn't realize that you were supposed to. So I used to walk everywhere with no shoes. It's like this weird kid who'd turn up for swimming like so early wearing my hand-me-down clothes with no shoes on and like just sit there and people are like, what is she doing here? Send that girl home.
Oh my God,
get her some shoes.
We need to get a photo of you when you're 8. Like, I just think we need to show our listeners exactly what you look like at then, because this is just too much. Like, just imagining your little... So at this point, are you walking down to the pool because of the Olympics, or are you walking down to the pool because you want to learn how to swim? Like, are you really at that point already quite visionary with what you want to do?
Oh yeah, no, I knew I wanted to go to the Olympics. I already knew how to swim. My mum had taught me, my gran taught me. There wasn't really air conditioning in Malawi, so swimming was how we cooled off. So I always swam, and my mum was actually a synchronized swimmer for South Africa, so she's always been fantastic at swimming. But no, I wanted to go to the Olympics from when I was 7, and when you're 7, that seems like a really easy, achievable goal. You're like, great, I'll just go to swimming every day and I'll just become an Olympian.
You had a bit of a thorough, like, there was a bit of a thoroughbred of a swimming culture around you at this point already.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, my mum had done synchronized swimming, and my dad's bloody hopeless at swimming, so that's always fun that I can beat him. But yeah, I just loved it. I just went down to the pool, and my coach who was there has actually been my coach since I was 7 years old, which is highly unusual. That
get
doesn't
out,
happen.
The coach that you have now.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It was
incredible.
Just like this tiny little pool, just a 25 little four lanes pool attached to the school. And I used to just go there, and for some reason, him, who's he's one of the best coaches in the world, and he's just at this pool and ended up coaching me and my sister, and he's had us since we were 7 and 9 all the way through to 18 years
later.
So
how does that, does he see you watching, like, how did that relationship start?
Well, mainly he saw me there and he was like, if I see you here anymore, I'm going to send you home and kick you out. Do not come back. I don't want to see you on Saturdays. I don't want to see you twice a day. if you're here anymore, I'm not going to let you get in the pool, was pretty much what he said to me, which was really smart because I was so obsessed with it when I was 7. He was just like, you need to take a step back. You're 7. Like, there's no 7-year-old Olympians. Like, wait until you're 17 and then we're like, that's
so
when we put in the work.
So were you taking that on board as a 7-year-old? Like, did you have to form some kind of separation with it, or did that make you more determined?
Well, it was good to say take a step back, because you do see kids getting thrown into things and then burning out by the time they're ready to fulfill their potential. So it definitely made me take a step back, but it didn't quell my desire at all. It sort of made me more and more motivated.
Which I think you probably would have known.
Yeah.
What's this coach's name?
Simon.
Simon. So from Simon's perspective, you're 7. He's looking at different swimmers of all different ages, of all, you know, all different abilities. What's he looking for in a 7-year-old? Like, do you have to be a good swimmer, or do you have to really want to be a good swimmer? Because can you learn it?
Oh, yeah, you can learn it. You can definitely learn it.
Have success at your level.
Yes, but you have to have both. Like, you have to have talent and feel for the water as well. I mean, I grew up with a lot of kids and we were all really motivated and all together, all doing the same number of sessions. And their arms didn't grow long, they go through puberty,
right.
Their bodies aren't the right shape for swimming anymore, or their shoulders aren't flexible and their ankles aren't flexible. Swimming's a lot about having really flexible joints. So at some point, you're either built for the sport or you're not.
Right.
And it's not only about trying hard, which is why I feel so fortunate in that for some reason I picked a sport which my body was quite capable of doing. If I'd picked basketball, for instance, I'm quite tall, so people ask me if I do basketball all the time. My brain is not capable of coordinating that ball to the hands, to the in the hoop, like, not my thing at all. I'll trip over and fall. So I could have picked that and been rubbish at it. So I was just really fortunate. I got obsessed with a sport that I was able to do.
Well, there was something in you that obviously knew. Like, it's interesting when you said, you know, we're at this shitty little pool, this 4-lane, 25-metre pool, and one of the best coaches in the world is just there. Like, it sounds to me a little bit like the universe kind of lined up.
unless 7-year-old Bronte's like, best coaches in the world.
You know
where,
what I mean?
Where like, is he Pangea?
Did Google like, exist?
No. Yeah, Google did not exist.
You know what I mean? And I can imagine little Bronte like, I'm going to go find him. Like,
little boss bitch, like with her with vision no, board, etc.
And no shoes on.
Like, no shoes, I'm off.
Yeah. But that's what I'm, like, it does, and the, even the way that you said, and I just happened to, you know how some people, you hear these stories and they just go, I don't know how, it just happened, or I just fell into it, or I just met the right person who knew this person, who then it just kind of fell into place. Literally. It sounds to me, and even the way you said my body just grew into the exact way that it needed to be for me to exceed and excel in the sport that I had fallen in love with. It sounds a little bit written, kind of.
It definitely does. And I mean, I'd come all the way from Malawi. My coach up until a year before had been in America mustering cattle. Mm. And then he came back to Australia and he was getting a job training horses. And the day before he was supposed to start, he tried to do an Irish jig and he broke his ankle.
Wow.
So that's how he ended up being a swim coach.
Oh my God.
I mean, his dad was an Olympian and a bronze medalist, and his great uncle's also a swim coach. So he's always been around swimming. But that's sort of how he ended up. He could have been coaching horses, and I could have gone into a program, a swim program, where they just, like, I don't know, for want of a better word, just beat the shit out of the kids all the time. Like, there's swim programs when they're kids and they just, like, pump them as hard as they can when they're young. And if I was in that, I would have stopped swimming because I would have hated it.
And when you're seven, you are influenced by what your coach says, by what your siblings say, by what your parents say. If somebody's saying, you're not really that good at it, or, you know, I don't have the time to take you on a Saturday, you know, that can really shape and form the rest of your life.
Yeah. And my parents were super nice. I mean, they're fantastic about it, because we all used to sit in the back of the car and it would be, oh, what are you going to do when you get back from the Olympics? And we'd all talk about all the things we were going to do after we'd all been to the Olympics together. And they were never like, oh, guys, you know you're probably not going to make it to the Olympics.
Yeah.
They never told us no, which was pretty powerful. We never believed that we couldn't do it, which is pretty naive, because, I mean, out of the 10 of us, 2 of us probably went to the Olympics. But it was a powerful thing, them not saying, by the way, guys, don't dream that big.
I think it is. I really do think it is.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, which I'm sure everybody in every interview ever wants to ask you about, because it is pretty rare, as you say, not only to say at 7, I'm going to make the Olympics, and then you do, but then also to have somebody like your older sister doing the exact same thing. That is essentially, when it comes down to it, your biggest rival, but also your best mate.
I want to interject there, because the reason, you know, that you shot to a lot of people's television screens was the Denton interview with you and your sister. So some people might be listening may have seen that interview and not have put two and two together.
Mm. So let's go back to when you were 7 and started swimming. Was your older sister, Kate, at the time a swimmer, as obsessed with swimming as you, or was that kind of a bug that you, that she kind of caught from you?
Yeah, she definitely caught that from me. So, she was...
And how do you feel about that? Because I'm...
Well, it's
because
actually...
when you're 7 and you do something first, like, I even know who was the pink Power Ranger. Like, I had a younger sister, so if you said you were something first, like, you were that character.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest thing we would always fight over. So is that a wound that is still not yet healed, because it was your thing for first?
Well, I actually think it's kind of my fault. So what what happened was, I was obsessed with it. I went to training all the time. I tried really hard. Kate sort of went to training and does that thing where you, like, turn around at the flags and push off, like, the bottom of the pool, and she just, like, didn't really give a shit. So when we went to our first competition, I won, like, all my 25-meter sprints and got my little age championship trophy, and Kate got, like, a little bronze medal, which was great. But I kind of showed off a lot and, like, wore my medals around and, like, brought my trophy to the table. But, yeah, Kate got a bit upset, and she stole all my medals and stuff. And Mum sort of sat her down and was like, look, Kate, you don't work hard. Bronte works hard. If you want the medals, you have to work hard. And from then on, she worked hard, and she's been incredible and incredibly hard for me to beat since then. So I look back at little 7-year-old Bronte, I'm like, why couldn't you just minded your own business? Like, why do you have to parade your medals around? This could have all been avoided. Like, I mean, this year I'm 2nd fastest in the world for this year. And the fastest person in the world is my sister. Like, you could have been the fastest.
Because it was, if it wasn't for Kate, you would be the fastest, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
Hold up. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It mustn't always have been easy, you know, because at the same time, there's lots of jokes and there's obviously a lot of love. She's your sister. And by the sounds of it, your family are very open and encouraging and kind. You just see that by meeting you. Your eyes kind of twinkle that you come from a nice place, a nice home. But I guess in the end of the day, everybody has their insecurities. Everybody has those moments where you're like, fuck, and you're thinking of the other person, and that person generally isn't either a friend or a person, like a person that is in your family. Has there been moments where you've had to overcome from that relationship?
Yeah, definitely. It's not always easy. I mean, there's times when it's really easy when you're in, say, an Olympic final, and the other person and there's your sister. And if you can't do well, all you want is for the other person to do well. Like, it's not so much about you two then. It's about the two of you versus the world, which is a pretty big thing. But it is rough when someone doesn't do as well as they want to do and you do better. I mean, the Comm Games is a good instance of that when, I mean, Kate did a pretty good time, but I just did, like, this amazing race. And it's not so much from within the two of us that the dynamic changes. It changes because people come up to you on the street and say stupid shit.
Yeah.
Like, after Comm Games, a lot of people would come up.
That was your world record, right? When you hit the world record?
No, that was in the relay. We got the world record together.
Oh, yeah.
I've never broken an individual world record. Only Kate did that. But I don't know. People come up to you in the street and they're like, You and we're both standing next to each other. Kate and me are standing there, and they'll be like, "Oh, Bronte, like, I'm so glad you won. I just really, like, I was really going for you. I wanted you to win, and I'm really glad that happened for you." And Kate's standing right there. And the opposite happens all the time as well. Like, they'll come up to Kate and be like, "Great job, you did so well," and just ignore the other person, even though you're standing right there. So you get to have, like, it's good because you get a very good view of how much people love you when you're winning and how much they don't give a shit when you're not. Which is, it's good to be exposed to at a young level. I mean, even like all those years when I was swimming and I was getting better and better and better, Kate was a very well-known swimmer at that point. And everyone used to come and talk to Kate about swimming. And then they'd sort of be like, do you swim too? And I was like, yeah, a little.
I do think sometimes with the attitude of, I wanted you to win, or I wanted you to win, I feel like some people in their own sibling relationships, it's that self-projection thing where I think some people would feel would not have a comfortable bone in their body having a sibling do the same thing and be better than them. So I think in some kind of sick way, although you're like, that's actually really rude what you just said, in a way I think people feel as though they're paying you a compliment and rude at all.
No, they do. And they definitely, people mean well most of the time, and you can see it, but they don't think that you're a person when they're talking to you. They think that you're an athlete, or
they don't think it through.
Which is fine, and I'm never rude to anyone. I never even tell them that they're rude, just like smile and whatever. But that's sort of when it gets to be a big deal, because for a long time after a meet, you're sort of reliving it through everyone else's expectations when they're coming to talk to you. I'd much rather just like have the meet, be in my little bubble, and then disappear.
I think it's really interesting because from the outside, a lot of people would assume that the harder parts are when you are coming second or not having a great day. But I think it's really interesting point to say that actually it can be quite hard when you are getting ahead, because then you're very protective or kind of worried about your sibling or worried about their experience. And that is hard because it means sometimes, and actually this is a question more than a statement, does it mean that sometimes it is harder for you to relish in your success when you're also quite naturally worried about somebody that you love?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's fantastic when you both do well together. That's a really good feeling, and that's why we love the relay.
The relay would be a good example of that. Hey?
In the same race, and you get to really work together and achieve something. But it is hard when you've achieved something you really want, and you see that your sister, the person you're closest to in the world, has not really done what they wanted to do. And it definitely takes away from it, but
do you feel like
not
you have
in a
to
bad way.
Do you ever feel like you have to celebrate less in those instances? Like,
No, because she's always celebrating with me. Like, in that exact moment when it happens, she's obviously, like, disappointed but also elated at the same time. So there's a good mix of feelings going on. And it's not we're lucky in swimming in that it's not just about the place that you get. You can also have, like, a fantastic race and have a great time and know that you've done a good job. It's not just measured sort of subjectively.
The grand final, you win or lose. You've got a whole season and one game goes. A Collingwood supporter, I really am feeling that right now.
She's really felt that quite recently.
But I want to talk about being an Olympian and that, I suppose, space that you hold with other fellow Olympians that the rest of us will never really understand, particularly an Australian Olympian. How has it been looking from that standpoint to the rest of the community and seeing the way they look back at you? What have you noticed about the way people look at you as an elite sportsman in this country, sportswoman in this country?
That's a very, very good question, because I do think about it a lot, and it changes for each Olympics. I think your first Olympics is a really, really fun thing. So I was just turned 18, had sort of no expectations, and people are just excited to see you go over there. And then my second time round, I'd been the world champion from the year before, and suddenly there's a ton of expectation. And once again, I don't think people mean badly, but we have this very weird sports culture where we sort of
so intense, very, very intense,
and people would come up in the street before you left and they'd be like, oh, like, good luck over there, all I want is for you to win gold, which is fine, because that's obviously what they want, but I don't think they hear what they're saying. They're saying, all I want is for you to win gold, like, not all I want is for me to feel proud of you, and they sometimes I get this thing where I'm like, do you have the right to want that for me?
Yeah,
because you didn't really do anything to help me get there. But
it's this real sense of ownership though in Australia, isn't it?
There is.
Which is great for this sense of community, but you even see that with footy finals over the last couple of weeks, like, my team or my boys,
look what,
or how
we did this. Yeah. And it's I love that they get on board that much, but sometimes I look at it and I'm like, is that entirely healthy?
I think it's much more extreme when you're an individual too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the team, there's a culture, there's a club, there's a coaching team, there's a PR team, there's supporters, a cheer squad, the works. When it's you, obviously you've got your coaching team, but it is very different for you to go get a coffee and somebody to come up to you personally and say, you must win gold.
But I think the other really nice thing is that as people get to know you as a person, and this is why I love going and doing, like, more informal sort of things, then they learn your story and they really get on board with that. And once they know that, of course they're in it. They're empathetic. They've got compassion. And I'm not sure whether it's, I mean, I'm talking about a few individuals. On the whole, people are really, really supportive. And as they learn more of your story, and what I learned from Rio, so I went into Rio, which not anyone knew at the time, but I had about 8 months of pretty much every single training session being compromised over an injury, but I didn't really want to tell anyone because you don't, that's the last thing you want to do before going into Olympics.
Who knows? At that time,
my coach, my family, a few people in the swimming community knew, because I wasn't racing, like, we'd have other races and I was like, I can't race. That was a big challenge for me, because I've always been able to work really hard in the pool, and then I stand up behind the blocks and you got this great feeling where you look at everyone else in the race and you're like, well, I've done the work to be here, and now let's just, like, let's go, let's see what we've all got on this day. And then going into an Olympics when you're standing up behind the blocks and it's the biggest stage in the world, and you're like, I have not been able to do the work to be here. Mm. I haven't been able to do it, and it's a hard thing to back yourself when you haven't put in the work to back yourself. So that was a very interesting challenge for me, and then it became about figuring out what I could do right. So making all the little, everyone talks about 1%ers, but making sure that everything was as perfect as I could get it. And realizing that it's not realistic to expect to go a personal best time after 8 months of compromised training. And then after that, the challenge is figuring out, okay, so we can't do what we used to do. There has to be another way. Of course there's another way. Let's figure out what the other way is now and figure out how to work out around the injury. And that's taken 3 years. But we're in a pretty good place now where it's pretty much manageable pain and it's manageable for training. And we've had to change pretty much everything that we would normally do. But it ended up in a great result in Comm Games. That was a personal best time. That was an amazing swim for me, and I definitely did not think that that was possible.
I've always been so fascinated by the psychology, not just behind elite sports people, but especially Olympians. I just think there is, like, when you think of an Olympics...
Crazy.
You know what I mean? Like, it is honestly down to maybe a matter of a 4 minute race or a 3 minute race, sometimes even less than that, and that can be 4 years worth of work. The psychology behind leading up and the pressure and the headspace and the fitness level to come down to, as you said, when you're standing behind the blocks, it is a day. If it was the day before, you could have been the best on that day. A day after, you could have been the best on that day. But on that day you're standing behind the blocks, you could not be. And that's 4 years worth of work to get there. I mean, what
sounds absolutely nuts, doesn't it?
That's what I mean.
I know, I'm watching your face. I'm like, Chrissy, calm down. Like, I'm seeing her hear her own life in front of her going, whoa.
It's not worth it. I'm out.
But since I've been a little kid, I remember Mum and Dad being like, yeah, I was like, when's the next Olympics? I was probably around the one before, 2000 Sydney Olympics. And I remember them saying it happens every 4 years. And I just, ever since then, I'm like, that's mental. Like, that is, it's a long time to prepare for something that can be so short.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you sell it like that, when you're like, okay, so you're going to wait 4 years and then you're going to get one shot, your race is under 30 seconds long, and you get a chance to put all your dreams into 30 seconds. Do you want to do that? If you sold that to a kid, they'd be like, no.
Does that terrify you or motivate you?
Well, it's extremely motivating because it's always been my dream, and I love... I mean, I was talking about pressure in a negative way before, and more as like other people's expectations I find frustrating to deal with because they're never really based on reality. They're based on something else. They're based on what they've been told or what they've been fed or their own idea of what's going on. But I love the pressure of like standing up and racing. I love the idea of standing up behind the blocks and you're all pitting yourself against the other people who are there, and it helps that all those girls have been racing for years, so we're good friends as well. But I love it, like more than anything. I love racing, and that's the thing, you love racing. And
yeah,
it's
you
not...
don't approach it like that one day, right? Because you're training every day.
You're training,
like, you're
every
swimming
day.
every year
yeah. There's a major comp. So this year there's Comm Games, next year there's World Championships, and then there'll be Olympics, World Champs, Comm Games. It cycles through, so it's not like once every 4 years you get to compete. We're competing all the time.
Oh, thank God, I can sigh a breath of relief over here.
And, I mean, back to Christy's point that she started with the psychology of it, what do you do for your mental health? What is in the program for swimmers to really, I guess, master that psychological aspect of the job?
Look, there hasn't actually been a lot, and it's good that we're now sort of exploring it a lot more. Particularly in just making swimmers people too. It's quite an insular sport, and it's also quite controlling, and kids are young when they start.
Yeah.
So young when you start, and you never sort of, your whole life is about swimming, and then you finish and like, where is your identity anymore? So
well, we've seen that with so many Olympians,
all
swimmers
the time.
In particular.
Swimmers in
yeah.
particular. Yeah. And I mean, you see it with swimmers because you see swimmers, they're quite visible, but it's across all sports that you define yourself by what you do every single day, and it's where you've got all your value as a human being, which is really, really sad. But it's hard not to be like that, because as soon as you do well, everyone loves you, everyone's congratulating you, and you feel self-fulfilled and you're getting fulfillment from everyone else, and you take all of that away. So it's something I'm quite interested in and passionate about, sort of pushing, people a bit more well-rounded outside of the sport.
So in the program, people aren't encouraged to see therapists or have that kind of version of training, the psychological part.
Or a sports psychologist or something?
Yeah, so sports psychology, we've had one on the team for a few years, and people are encouraged to see whoever they want outside of that. It doesn't always mean that it happens.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I definitely do. I've seen few different ones in the past, but seeing someone who's not really a psychologist, who's more of like a human behaviorologist, mm-hmm, which is mm-hmm. super interesting, because that's then all about your hormone levels and how that sort of impacts your mental state, mm-hmm. and then how you can reverse mm-hmm. engineer that, and thoughts and processes and physical things that you can do to bring down your stress and decrease cortisol, blah 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 blah, all that.
You're very intelligent. You are. You've
do you
got
think
a
so?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you're in tune.
And
job.
I
yeah.
well, I think you
good job of fooling you there.
No, I do. I think you are, because I think you are very inquisitive. Like, you'll look at things. And
I love looking at things.
Yeah, yeah, do you know what I mean? Curious. And I think to me that's what is the definition of intelligence. It's not book, you know, it doesn't have to be this book smart kind of, even though it sounds like you are. But I think it is interesting that people, you know, that do succeed the way that you have, that do have the ability like you to have gone across injuries and gone, how do we overcome that, or what's the other option? And I think that requires intelligence.
Yeah, I think mental flexibility is highly underrated. More than being, and we talk about it a bit with psychology stuff, more than being mentally tough, you want to be mentally flexible. You want to be able to bounce back from things. You don't always want to be like tough, mentally tough. Like, what does that even mean? Does that mean you're stoic? Does that mean that you sort of subscribe to this idea of like suppressing and controlling your emotions? You just want to be mentally flexible and want to be able to
and
move.
Open.
And in speaking about that, you would be the perfect person to help out some of our posse members. So we do a posse podcast where we get people that listen to the show, our beautiful posse, to email us or slide into our DM with a question for our beautiful guests that come in. And we've got one of them, if you wouldn't mind sticking around, that we can chuck up on the channel tomorrow.
Yep, that sounds good.
All right, we're going to call her Karen.
Okay.
So will you help Karen?
I will try and help Karen. Can I not be held liable if it all goes completely pear-shaped?
Welcome to our entire channel. We don't say we know shit. We just give it a go.
Oh, yeah, Bronte great. Campbell, what a stunning conversation this has been with you.
Absolutely.
Thanks
beautiful.
For having me, guys.
It's just been the best. We could have spoken for days. You can find her on Instagram, Bronte_Campbell, or on Twitter. We are really grateful for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, hey, are you sad the party's over? You don't need to be, because we're still partying over on Instagram. The Thinker Girls is where you can find us. Catch a bro bye. This podcast is presented by The Thinker Girls, Stacey June and Christy Mercer. This podcast is produced by me, Christy Mercer, and edited by our podcast producer, Jordan Lott.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.